Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the leadership at Fannin County High School in Georgia, which recently canceled their student production of Arthur Miller's play, The Crucible, after just one performance. Although the stated reason was that the production violated licensing by changing the script, the real reason was that conservative parents complained that the show was demonic and disgusting. Oh, the irony! A small-minded group of real-life Republican pearl clutchers were horrified that their daughters were portraying Salem-era witches in a play whose primary message is about the dangers of a fictional, small-minded community that succumbs to fear and social hysteria. It's as if they were writing the fiction into reality in real time. They couldn't have been more poignantly demonstrating it than the veracity of it if they had acted in it themselves. Now, of course, dear other, The Crucible was written as an allegory about the McCarthy era and the so-called Red Scare of communism, including the House Un-American Activities Committee and the blackballing of Hollywood actors over allegations they were or ever had been members of that party. And also, just as much, of course, we realize that while our own movement likes to hate McCarthyism, we certainly learned the lessons of that era and have used social coercion, fear, boycotts, and financial pressure to implement our own brand of blackballing, called cancel culture, for the good of the people, of course. Not for opposing the glorious economic system of communism, which we so earnestly yearn for. So whereas we obviously will cancel these Georgia cancelers, we do recognize that in some sense, those who cancel, and those who cancel, are all really fighting for the same principle, that individual freedom and diversity of opinion should only be allowed so long as it happens to agree with our own ideas. Also, just as obviously, we will always stand with the witches. Those misunderstood and maligned practitioners of the Wiccan arts, those harmlessly pagan celebrants of Mother Earth, who most certainly do not weigh the same as very small rocks or a duck. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Tennessee Republican Congresswoman Tim Burchett, who recently expressed solidarity with Fox News public enemy number one Jesse Waters and his absurd list of supposedly unmasculine behaviors. Waters' so-called Rules for Men, a personal inventory of do's and don'ts for the perennially gender-insecure men in his audience, ranged from not eating ice cream cones...
Also, when men eat ice cream in public, I do have an exception there. On vacation, you're allowed to lick an ice cream cone.
To not having friends as an adult best friends...
You reach a certain age where you can have friends, but you don't call them my best friend. And this came up... One of my producers said they were away for their weekend with his best friend. And he's like 40. I just thought that was a little odd.
To not drinking milkshakes?
His excuse was, well, I was drinking a milkshake. Again, you shouldn't be drinking a milkshake. Milkshakes are for kids.
Yes. They're delicious.
No.
To everything from leg crossing to soup eating to drinking from a straw.
I have rules for men. They're just funny. They're not that serious. Like, you don't eat soup in public.
Uh-huh.
You don't cross your legs. And you don't drink from a straw. And one of the reasons you don't drink from a straw is because the way your lips purse.
Mm.
It's very effeminate.
Now, even though Waters says he isn't serious, it's obvious from the level of thought invested in this litany of allegedly low-T activities that he's as serious as a mammogram. And when Tim Burchett embraces this list, we have a problem that must be addressed.
I don't drink out of a straw, brother. That's what the women in my house do.
Now, you might be saying to yourselves that anyone so fragile that their sense of masculinity depends on whether they sip soup, wave with both hands, or lick an erect ice cream cone in public has serious self-confidence problems. Yes, he's obviously overcompensating for some deep sense of gender inadequacy. But you're missing the real point. The danger of this list of behaviors isn't that they're silly. It's that their silliness embodies the wicked notion that some activities are feminine and other activities are masculine. Look, if 89th wave feminism has taught us anything, it's that we must always and forever be telling people the most important gender anarchist truth, that anything men can do, women can do better, and anything women can do, men can do also. We haven't spent 5 decades making it seem normal for women to belch, fart, swear, tell crude jokes, whistle at men, and have lewd bachelorette parties just to have some Fox News twit-wit remind people that the sexes are not interchangeable. We haven't been teaching men to put the seat down, use coasters, cry in public, groom their body hair, get pedicures, use conditioner, care about thread counts, and get in touch with their feelings just so they can suddenly consider the possibility that they've abandoned male gender norms. We want them to cross their legs and purse their lips. The whole point of everything we've done is to confuse the sexes, to make it seem like a gender is just a construct rather than rooted in biology, and to create the maximum amount of bathroom chaos as possible so that nobody can even form the idea of masculine and feminine anymore. Waters' list may be absurd, but the fact that it exists is the problem. We must always be mixing the sexes indiscriminately, for this is the very core of rainbow liberation ideology. Pursed lips don't sink ships. Man-spreading ladies are deconstructing the patriarchy, and sipping a nice hot cup of bouillabaisse is the adamantly gender-fluid way to consume non-gendered fluids. The people of the holy acronym string have spoken. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to offer our most sincere praise to the Supreme Leader of Iran, His Excellency Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, for this week demonstrating once again how to effectively subdue a population and maintain order through the propaganda of excessive legislation. Expanding on a 2019 police order that barred dog walking in the capital of Tehran, the Ayatollah, or just Ayhola, as his friends call him, barred public dog walking in 18 other cities, including Isfahan, Kerman, and Ilam. The stated justification for this new ban on organized canine exercise was public health, with the prosecutor in Hamadan calling dog walking, quote, a threat to peace and comfort. Since Islam has long viewed dogs as unclean and now views them as an invasive species representative of Western decadence and cultural corruption. As Ayatollah Khamenei has said, keeping dogs except for herding, hunting, or security is reprehensible. The new law also bans the transportation of dogs in cars, presumably unless you're taking them out for a nice abandonment in the country. Of course, we have no official position on the keeping of dogs as pets, which is apparently on the rise among Iranian youth, some of whom flout the ban by walking their dogs at night or driving them to remote locations for walks. But the reason we celebrate Khamenei today is that he is demonstrating that most enduring of political principles, Castleberg's fifth dictum on the preservation of social order. Always be making more laws, and the less those laws make sense, the better they are. For only a man who will obey irrational laws can be trusted to obey all laws. It has long been understood that the best way to cultivate obedience in a population is to stifle independent thought by requiring them to obey extremely silly rules. In fact, much as the Taliban have the Ministry for the Propagation of Vice and the Virtue and the Prevention of Vice, Iran should really consider establishing a Department of Proliferating the Outlawing of Things, similar to the role of, say, the IRS in the United States or the TSA. You see, if you can get people to take off their belts and shoes before entering an airplane, or to pretend that anyone understands depreciation schedules or the alternative minimum tax, you can get them to obey anything. Much as homeowners associations are one of the most effective methods for creating a subdued population in the suburbs, the banning of dogs in Iran is just another tool for habituating people to not question the legitimacy and authority of their governments. And as every young wokeling knows, the population that obeys together stays together. So well done, Iran, and good job keeping that next generation of young adults in line through excessive and ridiculous restrictions. All dogs may go to heaven, but they most definitely don't walk through Tehran to get there. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.